switch. Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, do you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show, coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida. A gorgeous, warm, hot, humid day here in Southwest Florida. I hope it's nice where you're at. I'm pretty sure it's pretty warm wherever you are. Looking at the map across the country, I think it was, 98 in Washington today? I can't think of a hotter place to be in Washington. Going there in just a couple of weeks, and it's I hope the hot weather's over with by then. It's mighty uncomfortable there. Not just Washington, but all over the country. But do remember, there is no global warming. There is no global warming. Just keep saying that to yourselves. And all you right-wingers, just keep saying that to yourselves as well. There is no global warming. Never mind that the temperature of the Earth right now, on the average, around the entire globe, is hotter than it's been since they've been keeping records since 1880. Never mind that. Over the expanse of millions of years since this planet was created, well, if you're a hardcore evangelical right-winger, it's only been here 6,000 years, you know. But over the millions of years that many of us believe that the Earth has been here, hundreds of millions of years, actually, a lot of people say this is just a regular ebb and flow, that the temperature goes up now and then, and it goes down. We shall see. I wonder how many times the polar ice caps have melted as they are right now. How did I get started on this? I wasn't going to talk about the environment today. Why did you make me do that? Hey, we've got a great show in store for you today. A couple of great interviews. We've got John Perkins, New York Times best-selling author. He's going to be on to talk about his latest book, The Secret History of the American Empire. Oh, man, what a read that is. You will love it. Full of facts and ideas and intrigue. And then in the second hour, we're going to have someone I'm sure you're all aware of. Liz Winstead's going to be with us. Liz was the co-creator and former head writer of Comedy Central's The Daily Show, and she was with Air America for a long time. She was nominated Best Female Club Performer by the American Comedy Awards. She's been around, and she's going to be with us at, I think, around 4:05 today. And she was on Air America, you know, with the Unfiltered Radio's mid-morning show, Air America's mid-morning show with the Citizen of the World and hip-hop legend Chuck D and political big brain Rachel Maddow. And Rachel does have a big brain. It's obvious every time I see her. I like Rachel Maddow. Best thing Air America has going for it right now, in my opinion. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program. And, of course, we would love to hear from you today. That's what the show is all about. Audience participation. I'll participate a little bit. You participate a little bit. We'll have the guest on, and we'll just all be happy, right? 866-546-5254. Of course, we did want to mention today the FISA thing that happened over the weekend. Man, oh man, oh man. I'm really sick of this. I'm really, really sick of this, and I know a lot of you are too. And it makes you wonder. So somebody said a long time ago, and I think the saying's been attributed to half a dozen people that I know of. I'm trying to think: Thomas Jefferson, maybe Einstein, maybe Ben Franklin. Ben Franklin gets attributed with every good quote, you know, as it goes. But and the saying goes something like this, and I know I'm paraphrasing, don't have it exactly right, but doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results is the very definition of insanity. And I always like to give the old analogy of it's like going into the refrigerator, pulling out the carton of milk, taking a sip of it, finding out the milk is sour and putting it back in and say, well, maybe it'll be better tomorrow. That's a definition of insanity as well. Supposedly, somebody famous said that right now, and I think it really doesn't matter who said it because it's absolutely true, and it most definitely applies to what is going on in Washington, D.C. right now, as evidenced by those votes over the weekend. It's becoming very, very clear to me, and it's my humble opinion, and you may or may not agree. It doesn't matter who we elect as our new president. We're going to get more of the same. And why do I say it? I know. I can hear some of you groaning when I say that. But why do I say it? Tell me, what have you heard in any of the debates so far, any of the debates as of yet, that would make you think that there's a big change on the way coming from the Democrats, Republican or Democrat? Let's throw them both into the mix. Oh, yeah, I know a lot of you got your favorite candidate that you want to believe that he or she's, everything this says true. But after the debacle of last weekend on the FISA bill, do you really think the Democrats are ready to make wholesale changes to our system of government? Do you really? Do you really think they'll undo the wrongs that Bush has instituted to take away some of our rights? Do you? You fully realizing how difficult it is to get rid of a bad law once it's put in. Have we done that? No. This FISA thing was a bad thing. The Patriot Act was a bad thing. We just keep going along with everything Bush wants to do. Do you really think there'll be a major shakeup in the healthcare system? Do you really think any of them who have a chance to be elected will do what the American people want and end this war? Do you? If you're honest with yourselves, you probably answer no to any and all of those questions. I know I'm answering no to all those right now. There is no real dialogue taking place on the political scene in America right now. And I'm talking about somebody that we feel has a good chance of getting elected. The wants and the needs of the American people means not a damn thing to almost all of our elected politicians. There are exceptions, but very few. And we all know what the polls say. The polls say we want the war over with. And surely you realize by now it's definitely not going to be over with anytime soon. The American people have solidly stood behind saving our civil liberties. Do the politicians hear us? Probably. Do they care what we're saying? Again, the answer is no. Hell no. As evidenced by the votes over the weekend. Congress just wrote Junior Bush a blank check to deal with our civil liberties. They knew we wanted less power in the hands of Bush and his gang of thieves and thugs, and yet they willingly handed him more power in spite of what the American people wanted. And do know this. Junior Bush can now spy on anyone, anytime, for any reason, and there isn't a damn thing you can do about it. If they don't like your political views, they can spy on you. They can set you up with any kind of a crime they conjure up. They can keep the right of habeas corpus away from you. They can declare you to be an enemy of the state and throw your ass in jail for as long as they like, and there is nothing you nor anyone else can do about it. Keep that in mind. I hate like hell to say it this way, because I know that I've become way too cynical for my own good. But the unvarnished truth is that what you want and what I want no longer matters to the government of the United States, our elected officials. Your rights as an American citizen are at the mercy of your political opponents. And the Democrats are not going to do anything to change that fact. They are complicit in these acts against Americans. They've gone along with Junior Bush at every turn. They know we don't like it, but they don't care whether we like it or not, because they know most of them will be reelected and they'll be able to continue to do things however they seem fit, again, totally ignoring the will of the people. We were all buoyed by the results of this last election. I remember the mood the day after. I was happy. I know you were happy. We should have known better, because this past election, because of all we've seen to come to pass or not come to pass since, this past election has meant almost nothing. We deluded ourselves into thinking that it was a watershed moment, but as it turns out, it was not. All we've gotten is more of the same old, same old. I think Congress has backed itself into a corner. The Congress of the United States is now nothing more than a body of politicians who live high on the hog, have the best health care in the world, great pay, fabulous benefits, and don't amount to a hill of beans in the grand scope of things. The office of the presidency is the only branch of government that means a damn thing right now. He controls this Congress. He controls the judicial branch, and he's not made a secret of it. Oh, I'll give him that. He's not hidden the fact. Screw you and anyone who seeks to go against anything Junior Bush and his administration wants to do. And it turns out that we don't need necessarily more Democrats in office. We need different Democrats in office. We need real Democrats in office. We need men who will stand up in the Democratic Party and act the way Democrats are supposed to do, the tried and true way the Democrats have acted over the decades. The true Democrats that we came to depend on to guard our freedoms. But sadly, I have to wonder, where have they gone? Where have the real Democrats gone? Yes, like I said, there are a handful of them left. Democrats who have the guts to talk to the American people and get things done that they were sent to Washington to do. We need the Democrats who have the guts to spit in the president's eye when he comes to them demanding the dismantling of our civil liberties. Oh, just give me six more months. Has that been a refrain you've heard before? Just six more months, just a few more months. Some of us call them Friedman units. Maybe you understand that. It's disheartening. This past weekend was particularly disheartening. We don't need any more trivial debates. We don't need any more of these petty arguments between Obama and Hillary. We don't need the same political charade we've seen for decades now. We need something different. We need change. We need huge, meaningful, drastic change. We need some real Democrats to step up. Trouble is, there aren't very many. Oh, you listen to the mainstream media talk about the fringe. The fringe. Those of us that want the war ended now, we are the fringe. Those of us that want health care are the fringe. Those of us that want a safety net for the citizens of this country like we used to have, the safety nets of health care and job protection and all that have disappeared, eroded gradually over the years, safety nets are gone. We're like circus performers now, high on a high wire aerial act, and if we fall, we don't get caught by any social safety net. We fall and die. Sadly, that's the way it is. It's the way it is with our health care system. Our civil rights going down the tubes. I guess it's obvious, too, that I'm thoroughly disgusted after this weekend, this past weekend. I'll probably get into that letter Nancy Pelosi wrote. Shameful letter that Nancy Pelosi wrote. In fact, I have it here somewhere. What did I do with it? I read this and I thought, my God, woman. You talk about a CYA letter. To the Honorable John Conyers, Jr., Chairman, Committee on the Judiciary, blah, 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 blah. Dear Chairman Conyers and Chairman Reyes, thank you for your leadership on matters affecting the security of the American people and the protection of the liberties that we define. Protection of our liberties, this vote, Nancy? Oh, I know, she says, your committees have been working diligently on a proposal by the administration to amend the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA. I also understand that your work has been hindered by the administration's refusal. Blah, blah, blah. We'll go back and fix it, folks. We'll go back and fix it after 6 months. That's what they're saying. Don't worry. We're working on your behalf. What is it they said? Keep our powder dry again? Keep our powder dry after the last two appointments to the Supreme Court. Keep our powder dry after the obstructionist Republicans ramming everything they wanted through their legislative, all their legislative policies that they wanted, ramming them through, not caring what the Democrats thought. And they've obviously forced the Democrats into a corner now. And we should keep our powder dry. We're going to wait for that big victory Harry Reid keeps talking about. We're gonna pick our battles, Harry Reid said. Remember that? Pick our battles. Harry, pick one. Pick one. Tell me something, anything, that you fought hard for. Anything. Let's go to the phones. 866-546-5254. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy. This is Phil in Daytona Beach.
Hi, Phil.
I guess I got lucky and got first in the queue again.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, Guy, and I've been saying this, our country has been took. It's been taken. And how much more has to happen before people wake the heck up? The Democratic Party and the Republican Party, they've both been hijacked. These people are literally enemies to the to us, you know, and I think if you read the oath of office that these people take, and then you read the Constitution, they are actually domestic enemies.
Well, they sure haven't done anything to prove otherwise lately.
I mean, you know, we're talking, you know, if people get out the daggone Webster's Dictionary and look up words, you know, this is actually treason. And, you know, if that doesn't convince people that you know, I I'm really ticked off that I've seen that people that are registered Democrats follow this leadership without questioning them, the same way these ditto head Republicans follow Bush. You know.
Oh yeah, I'm seeing it by the dozens in my email. I'm seeing it on some of the major Democratic websites. You take a look on DemocraticUnderground.com. I don't visit much there anymore, but there's a lot of posts on there. I noticed after this weekend of people saying, "Hey, you're not a real Democrat. If you're gonna, you know, you got to stick with them. You got to stick with them." They're making it awfully tough.
I didn't let you finish. I'm sorry, Guy.
Go ahead.
No, I interrupted.
No,
you.
I'm just saying they're not helping us any. The Democrats aren't helping us stick with them. They're driving us away. I don't. I'm so disgusted with it. I it's difficult
well,
for me to
talk
about.
Well, I've got a message for them. You know, you got to be an American first, damn it. Democrat and Republican ain't going to matter when they start rounding us up, man. That sounds insane, but why the hell are they passing all these laws?
Just a little bit at a time, people. You know, we're that frog in the boiling water.
You know, and history repeats itself, guy.
Yep.
You know, these imperial dictators, or whatever you want to call them, have used this playbook over and over again. And you know, you know, history also shows that empires eventually fall.
Yep.
You know, but they fall on us, damn it. And wake the heck up, people. This is beyond Democrat and Republican. This is beyond whatever phony candidates that both parties controlled by this elite and this military-industrial complex are parading out for us. They're all on the same team. Hillary Clinton is on the same damn team as Rudy Giuliani, and people better wake the heck up to that.
Get the money.
Social policy doesn't mean squat when you're under a dictatorship, damn it.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, has anyone been paying attention to the last 6 years? If people haven't realized that these clowns that are currently holding seats with a D next to their name, and you mentioned that these people are not real Democrats. No, they're not. And they're not real representatives of the people, and they're actually traitors to America. They're traitors to our country by definition. If you look at the oath they take to uphold the Constitution, and you look at the Constitution, you look at the laws that these people have passed and allowed their executive branch to continue to break, they have actually are enemies to the Constitution.
Well, they actually got the Democrats to go along with passing this latest addendum, you might say, to the FISA, to this renewal of the FISA. They actually got that done to cover their asses because they know they were operating illegally.
They should be calling for GD investigations, man.
They're not going to. They're not going to.
That's got to be a wake. How much more does it have to be? I mean, people are losing their homes left and right. The dollar means nothing. It's you know, I keep an open mind. I listen to all sides, you know. I listen to the horn. I listen. You know who's really done a great job, who's finally woken up there, or they woke up earlier than some of us have been waking up, is the folks on AfterDowningStreet.org. You know, the anti-war community and impeachment community. And a lot of those folks have skin in the game.
Oh, they do. But, you know, unfortunately, there's not enough of us going along with them. Just not nearly enough. And
you know, well, anyway, they hooked their carriage to the Democratic Party, you know, to get us out the heck out of the war and work their asses off to get a lot of these clowns elected, you know, to only have Pelosi and Conyers just turn their backs on us.
Yep.
In January, and you know, and they're finally waking up. Well, some people were woken up a long time ago that the Democrats and the Republicans, as they are two sides of the same coin. You know, the party and the principles and the platforms are two different things, Guy.
Well,
have been hijacked.
It's like I said, it's like we got one puppet master with a blue glove on one hand and a red one on the other, and one puppet master, the corporatocracy of this country, running both of them. Hey, got to run, Phil. Thanks for your call.
One other thing,
yeah,
Guy. You mentioned, you know, we got to bring about change. I want to push this again. Please go to wearechange.org. And these are young people with camcorders. that are actually confronting Pelosi, confronting Giuliani, and exposing them for the frauds they are, and then uploading this stuff on the internet and writing citizens journalism. I hope that the listeners take, maybe you can even have one of them as a guest someday. WeAreChange.org. It's a model that okay. any one of us can follow.
Okay, we'll try and do that. Hey, thanks,
hey,
Bill.
Thank
Good
you,
Good to hear
guys.
From you.
Bye-bye.
Well, we're going to pause for a break. We'll be right back.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
From the Night Sound Studios, here's Charm City's very own, sassy and classy, Erica Richards.
Join us at Night Sounds every Saturday night at 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern for a unique musical experience. You'll hear featured segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications hosted by yours truly, Erica Richards. To request a dedication, please contact Erica Richards at BillyShearsMusic.com. That's Erica with a K and Shears, Shears. To reach Billy Shears, direct your email to NightSounds@BillyShearsMusic.com. We'll be waiting for you this Saturday evening. It's time
for us to start again. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
There must be some way out of here, said the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion, I can't get no relief. Businessmen, they drink my wine, plowmen dig my earth. None of them along the line know what any of it is worth. The thief, he kindly spoke. There are many here among us who feel that life is but a joke. But you and I, we've been through that, and this is not our fate. So let us not talk falsely now, the hour is getting late. The view, while all the women came and went barefoot. hired servants too. Outside in the distance, a wild cat did growl. Two riders were approaching, the wind began to howl.
And we're back here in the Guy James Show, proud member of the Head On Radio Network. So glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Thank you for being with us here. We've got a great show lined up for you. And as promised, right now, we have on the line John Perkins. He's the New York Times best-selling author. The new book out, The Secret History of the American Empire. I just finished it last night. It's a great read. I know you will all love it as well. Well written and very informative and interesting. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Guy. It's great to be with you today.
Fabulous book. Congratulations. You're no stranger to the New York Times bestseller list, certainly.
Well, that's true. Confessions of an Economic Hitman has been on there for 67 weeks now. It's on the extended list, but nonetheless the list. So, and let's see, The Secret History, you know, has been on a couple of weeks. And it's, you know, I mean, I say that not from great personal pride, although certainly it's gratifying. But what I find exciting about all this is that it really tells us that the American people want to know what's going on behind the scene. They want to know the secret history of what truly is happening in the world, and I find that gratifying.
Oh, it is gratifying to know that somebody's interested in something more than Lindsay Lohan and I don't know what Britney Spears and some of those people.
Now, I would rather talk about Britney Spears and Lindsay, if you don't mind, instead of, you know, all this worldwide stuff. We could just focus in on the good juicy stuff. That would be great.
It would be good, wouldn't it, if we didn't have those other things facing us?
God, isn't it amazing though how what we do to deny ourselves? Just talking about the things that are really important to us and our children and grandchildren.
Oh, and I guess these other things are maybe needed diversions.
I think it's part of the plan. You know, part of the plan to keep our minds off what we really, really should be facing, addressing, and talking about.
Well, I want to talk about your new book, The Secret History of the American Empire. There's a lot of stuff in this book that the average person is going to be reading and go, you know, as I was, wow. I mean, we know several of the folks over at the CIA and all, and I don't think I've ever had anybody that was as more closely affiliated with NSA than you are. How did you, if you would please, take a moment and tell us, how did you get affiliated with the NSA and started on your career in this?
Well, it was in the late 60s. I was still in school, Boston University Business School. I did not want to go to Vietnam. I didn't believe in the war there. And my wife's father was high up in the Navy Department, and a very good friend of his was very high up in the National Security Agency. So it was a draft exempt job, and they put me through a long series of tests, lie detector, personality tests, and they discovered that I would make a good economic hitman, and I had a couple of weaknesses in my character that would make it easy for them to hook me into that kind of a job. So I was recruited by them at that time. I took a little diversion, went into the Peace Corps for 3 years when I actually learned a lot of hands-on experience about what would be useful to me when I became an economic hitman. And as soon as I got out of the Peace Corps, I started in doing the economic hitman work.
Well, we don't normally think of our government recruiting somebody because they have some weaknesses. How does that play into being exploited by our government, your personal weaknesses?
I'm afraid that that's a pretty common characteristic. Part of those personality tests that they give us, not to find out whether we're competent to do things, but also whether we're going to stay with a job. And they're certainly not looking for somebody that's real independent-minded and that can walk away from something. In my case, the weaknesses I discovered were basically, I think, the three big drugs of our culture, money, power, and sex. And at that point in my young life, I was just in my early 20s, I was pretty addicted to all of those. And all of those can be used as hooks to make sure that you toe the line, that you play the game their way, and that you do the things they want you to do.
Well, pretty powerful weaknesses, to be sure, and just about all of us have them, and especially in your 20s like that, yeah, you would be prone to having those exploited. Your first mission for on this, where did you go and what did you do?
Indonesia was my first assignment, and I went there for about 3 months. I talk about it extensively in the books, especially in The Secret History, where I was sent off to really corrupt the government of Indonesia. It was already pretty corrupt, but I was sent off to do even more. Specifically, at that time, our government was pretty sure that Vietnam was going to fall. This is, when I went there, was, you know, 1970-71, when I actually went in 71. And we believed in the domino theory, that if Vietnam fell, then one Southeast Asian country after another would fall like so many dominoes. Indonesia was looked at the place to stop that. It had, and in addition, it had tremendous resources. We just discovered oil. We knew there was a lot of oil in Indonesia. And it was the largest Muslim population anywhere in the world lived in Indonesia. So there were many reasons to win Indonesia over. So I was sent in to work to create the need for a loan, a huge loan from the World Bank, the Asian Development Bank combined, and several other banks. To build big electrical systems that would tie in all of Java, the most populated piece of real estate in the world at that time, to one electrical system. And this meant that Indonesia would have to accept a very, very large loan from the World Bank, and that then they would have to use that money to hire our companies, American, U.S. companies, to build this huge integrated electrical system. And the system would benefit a few of their very wealthy people, the people who own the big industries and the commercial buildings. But most Indonesians wouldn't benefit at all because they weren't even connected to the electrical grid. And those that were would have maybe one or two light bulbs, and that was it. So the whole thing was set up to make our companies very rich in the United States and a few rich Indonesians, and to leave the whole country holding a huge debt, one it couldn't possibly repay, so that we could go back to them periodically and say, look, you owe us a lot of money, sell your oil real cheap to our oil companies, vote with us on the next critical United Nations vote, support our wars, wherever they happen to be at that time, Vietnam, later Iraq. And this is pretty much the model that I used in many countries, an economic hitman used to win countries in, to basically make them part of our empire. But instead of using the military to do it, we use economics, and it's very, very subtle. So most people in the United States don't even realize that this has been going on for these last decades.
And we get the cooperation of the Sukarnos and the Shahs of Iran and people like that. It seems like we get their cooperation without them having to do a lot of military operations. The money, and that's always attractive to those people.
That's right, Guy. And if we don't succeed, if for some reason one of these presidents does not go along with this game, as what happened to me in Panama with Omar Torrijos, he was incorruptible. I couldn't win him over. I couldn't get him to accept these loans and do that thing. Then we send in the jackals, who are men who will overthrow governments or assassinate their leaders. And in the case of Omar Torrijos of Panama, they assassinated him because I was unsuccessful. So it's really a three-stage process. As the economic hitmen, we usually are successful. If we're not, then the jackals are sent in to overthrow presidents or assassinate them. And on a few very rare instances where neither of those two are effective, then and only then is the military sent in. And that's essentially what happened in Iraq. The economic hitmen and the jackals both failed, so the military was sent in.
Well, in your book, the new one, the Secret History of the American Empire, you talk about how there's an American empire, and you just mentioned it. It might be the only real global empire there is right now, and it's been developed slowly but surely over the years. Is it the first real global empire? Do you count out the Brits in that?
Yeah, the Brits never really established a presence in Latin America, and their empire was immense. And certainly they established a presence in North America, but they never made it into South America or Central America, other than Belize. I think today our empire reaches every continent, every culture. We're in Asia, we're in the Middle East, we're in Africa, very pervasively in all of those places. We're in the Pacific Rim countries, we're in all of Latin America, we're in Europe. Our culture, the language, English, is the number one language for international business and diplomacy. Our movies, our radio stations, our books, literature, our music is pervasive around the world. The dollar reigns supreme as the world's currency, and we represent less than 5% of the world's population living here in the United States, and yet we consume more than 25% of the world's resources that we get from all these other parts of the world, often using essentially slave labor, and we create more than 30% of the world's pollution. We are truly the first global empire, if you look at it from the standpoint of all the continents that we reach.
Well, empires, when you talk about empires, that denotes emperor. And are you saying George Bush is the emperor here, or if not, who is?
Yeah, that's the tricky one. I define 8 points of empire and work through these definitions with college students around the country, and we meet every one of those 8 points. You only really need to meet a couple of them to classify, but we meet all of them, and this is described in detail in The Secret History. The one tricky one is the emperor. And an emperor is a person who serves for no limited term, is not elected, and basically reports to no one. The president of the United States doesn't fall into that category, at least not yet, and because they do serve a limited term and are theoretically elected. But what we have is the equivalent of the emperor in a group of people that I call the corporatocracy. These are the men and women who run our biggest corporations. This isn't a conspiracy. They don't have to conspire to make this work. They just work together very closely without having to get together in, you know, darkened rooms and conspire to do something illegal. They don't have to do that. But they run this global geopolitics of the planet very conveniently, whether we have a Democrat or a Republican in the White House or running Congress. This has continued with Democrats and Republicans alike. Of course, there's a difference in terms of selecting the Supreme Court and a few national laws in the United States, but in terms of international empire building, it continues under both. And these people at the corporatocracy control all of our politicians, especially at the national level, because they finance their campaigns. The owners of the corporations are the big contributors, and so every politician is on some level beholden to these people. They own the media, either directly or indirectly through advertising, at least the mainstream media. And so they really are running this planet today, and they are the equivalent of an emperor. They're not elected, they don't serve a limited term, and they basically report to no one. They have their boards of directors, but they're all on each other's boards of directors, and they let each other get away with just about anything they want to.
They certainly seem to, and I think you've come across one of the points. You say they own the media, and even the media is beholden to them. Thus, that would explain why on a Saturday evening you may see an advertisement on CNN for Boeing or Martin Marietta. We as consumers, those ads don't mean a thing to us.
Right. There's a lot of ads on television that don't seem to make much sense. You know, what's the company BAF or something that's always advertised?
Yes.
We don't make cards, we don't make trains, and so on and so forth, but we make the stuff that makes them happen. Who are they trying to convince? It isn't the average football watcher.
We're throwing money at the media. We're putting this ad on to get something. That's where that's going. But you mentioned about the political parties. That's really not an impedance to the true emperor you're talking about with this corporatocracy. When one party takes over and like the Democrats did recently and will probably take over the White House soon, they simply shift gears and make do with that, don't they? The politics aren't that important.
Not at all. And in fact, they have a lot of control. I mean, I think one of the most poignant examples is Jimmy Carter. During, and I have this from a lot of people that I've heard this from, Nixon had been thrown out of office, and Ford was a very lamed-up president, and the Republicans, the neocons, everybody knew Ford was not going to be reelected, and a Republican wasn't going to be elected in the next election after what happened with Nixon, that a Democrat was going in. So it was basically set up to put in a weak Democrat, someone who was going to be a one-term Democrat, and make him as weak as possible, cut him off as much as you could. And also, and I'm not saying this against Carter. I think Carter was a very decent human being, and still is. I think very highly of him as a human being. But he was an inept president, and from the beginning that was planned. He was also installed with probably the most draconian national security advisor in the history of the White House. That was Brzezinski. And under Carter, some pretty terrible things happened around the world. And so despite the fact that he was a very decent human being who's come to stand recently for justice and peace and fair elections, he was very much a lame duck, and he was planted in there to make sure that the Democrats would only be in for one term, and after that we could get someone like a Ronald Reagan running the country.
Sure. Let's move over to a very controversial issue. No matter where you go in the world, we could discuss this issue, and it'd be controversial, I believe. And that's Israel. You have strongly suggested in your book that Israel is there as some sort of a surrogate, and that the U.S. is our empire is really exploiting the Israelis. Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, there's no denying that the Jewish people have been treated very, very badly throughout history, and they were treated very, very badly under Hitler and deserve a homeland as such. But what's fascinating about all this is that their homeland happens to have been in the middle of the biggest oil wells in the world that were controlled by Arab nations, which often were hostile to the British earlier in the century and to the French, and we knew would be to us. And so to create that homeland in a place that could provide a fortress for the G8 countries, for the United States, for the empire, basically, was very advantageous. And in a way, you could say, and I've heard a lot of Israelis as well as Arabs say that they feel that Israel is terribly exploited in this regard. It is the largest recipient of U.S. foreign aid, military aid in the world. And the chaos that sweeps the Middle East, the wars, the tension between Palestinians and Lebanese and Israelis, and even between Shiites and Sunnis, is a very helpful thing to the corporatocracy. They like chaos because it makes it easier for them to exploit people on many different levels, and it makes it easy for them to have an excuse of sending vast militaries, either in the form of aid to Israel or directly into Iraq, which not only is about oil, but think of all the money that comes from sending those militaries in and from the construction and reconstruction that goes on as a result of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Tremendous fortunes are constantly made and enhanced as a result of this chaos. You know, you and I, Guy, may think that Vietnam was a failure, and we may think that Iraq is a failure, but the corporatocracy doesn't see it that way at all. They made a lot of money in Vietnam. They're making a lot of money in Iraq and throughout the Middle East today. They make a lot of money whenever there's chaos and warfare and bloodshed.
It's very hard for a lot of people to understand that there are people that cold in this world that look at it that way. But there are plenty enough of them. So you're really saying, and correct me where I've got this wrong, I'm going to paraphrase you now, that when Israel was created, when they got there, when the UN and everybody voted to let them go there, and it was kind of under the guise, it's my recollection anyway, kind of under the guise that here you've been done wrong, we're going to give you this land because you've been done wrong, that really wasn't in the eyes of the corporatocracy of the United States of America, this empire, that wasn't the idea at all?
The people that Eisenhower, in his last presidential speech, identified as the military-industrial complex, did not see it that way. They are the people that have become what I call a corporatocracy. That isn't to say that an awful lot of other people did see it as creating a homeland for the Jewish people, and a lot of people in the United Nations certainly saw it that way. There's a lot of people who buy into all of this and can be in fairly high places. But above all of that, sort of behind the scenes, are people who look at the world very much like emperors always have, as being a place to make vast fortunes and build huge power bases. And emperors have never worried about, you know, thousands of people dying in wars or strife of whatever kind. They've always been willing to sacrifice tremendous numbers of people in order to collect more power and more resources.
And again,
I don't want to imply that everybody was thinking that way. I mean, even in the World Bank, you've got tremendous numbers of people who are very well-intended, who are trying to do the right thing. But at the top, you've got an organization that's not a World Bank at all. It's very much a U.S. Organization. Similar things that happened in the U.N., especially back in those days at the end of World War II, we really had tremendous control over the U.N. But again, this isn't to say that the majority of the people involved in that whole process thought that way. I don't believe they did. They were trying to do something decent for the Jewish people, and still people do want to do something decent, but the people that are pulling the strings behind the scenes love to have this strife, love to have this fortress in the middle of the biggest oil fields in the world.
So it's not a big conspiracy someplace, it's just the nature of the beast that behind the scenes there are always enough greedy people that'll take advantage of a situation like this, or are you saying there is some sort of an underlying deep dark conspiracy somewhere?
It's not a conspiracy in the sense that these guys get together and plot to do something illegal. And being a conspiracy, you have to be doing something illegal. For the most part, what they're doing is legal. They write the laws. But what you do have is a belief system that says we must make windfall profits for a few rich people. We must make a few rich people get richer at all costs, despite what happens to the environment or social issues around the world. We must maximize profits. And that's the heart of the trouble. And the people who run these big corporations, that is their goal. They all graduated from the same schools, essentially, and they're all headed toward that same destination, windfall profits. And when they look at the world that way, they'll look at a place like Israel, Palestine, Iraq, Vietnam, whatever, in those terms and move forward to realize those objectives. And they'll justify it on the grounds that it's good business. It's good business to build up military forces in these places, and they just happen to be the ones who, you know, benefit from building up the military forces. But there too lies the solution, Guy, because in The Secret History, I devote a great deal of the book to advocating a change. I believe we can change the system. And what we must do is get the corporations to change their basic reason for being, redefine what it is to be a successful corporation. Instead of defining it as a place where you maximize profits, where you get windfall profits, let's define it as a place that will help us create a stable, sustainable, and peaceful world for everybody, everywhere. Recognizing that my grandson can't grow up in a stable, sustainable, and peaceful world unless every child born on every continent of this planet has that same expectation. We can have no homeland security until we see the whole world as our homeland. And if we can then redefine the basic goal of these corporations, and if we can praise those and have on the front page of Fortune magazine or Time magazine, have the pictures of people who are running organizations headed in that direction, let's praise those people rather than the ones that make the greatest profits year after year after year, which right now is the ones that we tend to praise.
Will, if in the opinion, I have a recently departed friend that had an important office on K Street, and he and I have discussed China at great length, that it appears that China may be the next great empire. Will the powers that be in this country, that the greedy corporatocracy, will they have an impact there without the great military power of the United States being behind them? Will they be able to stop China from becoming the next big empire?
Well, I think there's a couple of answers to that question. One is that we know from history that empires always collapse. And when they collapse, you get a void, and then you usually get wars, either economic or military wars, and a new empire evolves. And if this empire collapses, then that could very well happen, and China could evolve as the next empire. On the other hand, what's going on right now is that China is becoming a partner of the corporatocracy. There's all kinds of deals being worked out. It is not really working as an adversary. There's parts of it that are adversarial, and I think China's positioning itself so that if the empire does collapse, China will be in a very good position. On the other hand, if the empire doesn't really collapse, it may just shift its locus from the United States, where most of these corporations today are located, to China. We're already seeing Halliburton move to Dubai. We see that really occurring, that big U.S. corporations are forming partnerships with the Chinese, and usually that's with Chinese corporations, but they're usually owned 50 or 51% by the Chinese government. So we're already seeing a movement that's creating a whole new type of empire that doesn't have to be U.S.-based or Chinese-based. I think in the old days, up until very recently, we looked at the world as about 185 countries or so, of which a few were very powerful, the USSR, the USA, until détente, then it was the USA, and now China's emerging. But the real geopolitics of the day of today could be looked at more like huge clouds drifting around this planet. They know no national borders. They don't respect any particular laws. They choose whichever ones best suit their immediate interests. Those are the huge corporations, and they don't have to be located in the United States or in China or anywhere else particularly. They just drift around the whole planet. And so I think, you know, what we need to do, we the people, you and I and everybody who listens to this show, is do something that's never been done in history before. Break the mold. Let's not allow this empire to collapse. Let's instead transform it into a model that really works, that will bring a sustainable, stable, and peaceful world to every child born on this planet from now on. Let's make that happen. Let's force the corporations to change. And we've been very successful at changing corporations in the past in specific issues like cleaning up rivers, getting rid of aerosol cans, opening their doors to blacks, women, and minorities, installing seat belts, getting rid of trans fats, those kinds of things, wherever we've focused on getting them to change in specific issues. Now we need to ratchet that up a notch and get them to really identify their true reason for being, which is to create a good world, to be good communities, good citizens.
Absolutely. And, I do want to stress that point, that the book isn't all doom and gloom. There are ideas in there on change and what we can do to change it. And it's a book that identifies the problem, the symptoms, and the history of it, and also gives us some ideas of where we can go in the future. John, your website is johnperkins.org?
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
And
a couple of nonprofits I helped to form and serve on their boards are dreamchange.org and Pachamama.org, Pachamama.org. But you can link to those through my website.
So, great. And the book's available just about everywhere right now, The Secret History of the American Empire.
Correct. Sure. Yeah. It should be in any bookstores or online vendors.
Well, good luck with it. I guess I don't need to wish you luck with your books. You don't need luck.
Let's wish each other good luck at really turning this world around, Guy, because it's radio shows like yours that are going to be the most successful at making that happen, too. Thank you for what you're doing.
Well, thanks so much, John Perkins, for being our guest today. Thank you.
You're welcome.
This truly is a great book. It's one of those ones you don't want to put it down. I had to for a couple of days. I had to put it down for a couple of days. I had other things I was doing, but it's one of those ones you don't want to put down. And it's written from a very humanistic point of view. Like he said, there were some very complex, in our conversation we had before the show today, some very complex issues that were written in a way that anybody can understand it. So many times there are people who are very intellectual, and he is, but can only write in a way that another intellectual can understand. This book, anybody can read this and understand the great points he tries to get across, and I would recommend it to anybody. JohnPerkins.org, The Secret History of the American Empire by John Perkins. Again, it's on the New York Times bestseller list. You'll find it just about anywhere. Be sure and check it out. We may give a copy of it away next week. I think we will, maybe even Thursday. We'll try and do that Thursday of this week. Well, here we are. Gosh, the first hour of the program is almost gone. Do I sound like an old country boy? Gosh. First hour of the program is gone already. Where did it go? And I certainly enjoyed talking to John Perkins. And don't forget, we've got Liz Winstead coming up as our guest in the second hour. That'll be right away, right after the news at the top of the hour. So stay tuned for that. You're listening to the Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back right after the news, and we expect that you will be here as well.
This is the Quality News Network. In southern Afghanistan, U.S. and coalition forces repelled an attack on a military outpost, killing nearly two dozen Taliban fighters. More than 75 militant fighters attempted to overrun Firebase Anaconda in the Ruzgan province using small arms and rocket-propelled grenades. There were no reports of U.S. or coalition casualties. Georgia officials have claimed Russian fighter jets fired a missile into the region 40 miles west of the country's capital. Moscow has denied the charge. The rocket failed to go off. Georgia, once ruled by Moscow, has been at odds with the Kremlin since the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. Rescue efforts continue for the six miners trapped in a cave-in 1,500 feet underground in the Crandall Canyon coal mine in Huntington, Utah. Bob Murray, head of the company that owns the mine, says it will take at least 3 days to get to the trapped men, whose condition is unknown. In Minneapolis, state officials say they are fast-tracking construction for a replacement of the I-35 West Bridge, which collapsed last week. The span is a major transportation corridor between the Twin Cities. Builders have less than 24 hours to submit their requests to bid on the multi-million dollar project. In northwestern Montana, residents forced to evacuate their homes due to a 22-square-mile wildfire were permitted to return to their neighborhoods briefly last night. The blaze is still out of control, and firefighters say today's expected weather conditions will hamper their efforts to contain the blaze. In New York City, a federal judge has ordered the release of thousands of pages of intelligence data gathered by the NYPD during the 2004 Republican National Convention. Police defended their actions, saying their undercover operations were aimed at protest groups and were necessary to prevent disruptions at the convention. In Oakland, California, a 19-year-old employee for a black Muslim militant group has confessed to the murder this week of a newspaper editor. The editor of the Oakland Post was investigating the organization's finances. In southern New Mexico, a medevac plane crashed yesterday, killing all five aboard, including a woman and her baby, who were on their way to the University of New Mexico Hospital in Las Cruces. In southern Texas, a 71-year-old woman drove her pickup truck off a 100-foot cliff yesterday and lay underneath the wreckage for more than 7 hours. She was rescued, then treated, and then released. In Chicago, the AFL-CIO will host a debate tonight for Democratic presidential candidates. The 90-minute debate will be broadcast on MSNBC. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Coming up next, science and business.
Hey, what's he doing?
What?
That guy is changing his oil in the street and letting it run right in the storm drain, which pollutes the bay. I totally wouldn't surf in that.
Dude, what can we do?
Call 1-800-CLEANUP to report anyone dumping oil, antifreeze, or paint in the street.
This way, fools like that can be fined.
Tell everyone to call 1-800-CLEANUP.
Taking care of the marine sanctuary is your duty. From Mayos at Monterey High.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to a million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
In a recent survey, 9 out of 10 Americans say texting while driving is dangerous. A recent Harris poll found 89% of respondents believe sending text messages while driving is dangerous and should be banned, while 57% of pollsters admitted to doing it. Space Shuttle Endeavour has been cleared for takeoff. Weather forecasters say skies will be clear for the planned takeoff tomorrow at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. It will be the first Endeavour flight in nearly 5 years. The FDA has approved a new type of drug to combat HIV. Taken orally, Pfizer's Selzentry is designed to prevent the virus from entering healthy immune cells. Upon announcement of regulatory approval of the drug, Pfizer's shares rose 2.6%. For the first time in years, Bill Gates has lost his ranking as the richest man in the world. Fortune magazine says the number one spot now goes to Mexican tycoon Carlos Slim, whose net worth is listed at $59 billion. Israel announced today its airport security services will no longer use stickers to color code the suitcases of non-Jews. In addition, the nation's transportation agency will improve services in Arab neighborhoods, including enhancing train services. Light sweet crude is trading at $71.95 a barrel. on the New York Mercantile Exchange and on Wall Street at this hour. The Dow Jones is up 34 points, the NASDAQ is up 4, and the S&P 500 is up 6 points. You can always log on and find more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Jay Gallet.
Fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
And welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network. I'm glad you stayed with us during the news. Well, you had to, didn't you? You were ordered to stay with us during the news. And, of course, I know that every single one of you was looking forward to the interview we told you about. Were you not? Yes. And yes, I'm not kidding. She is with us live and in person, almost, by phone. It's Liz Winstead.
Hi, guys.
How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to do it.
Well, I'm happy to have you on here. How did you get hooked up with The Daily Show?
What happened was I started out by trade as a stand-up, and I was doing political satire for many years. And then Comedy Central said, hey, we kind of want to do a show that's on every day, and we want to respond to the news and everything, and, you know, we like, you know, sort of your brand of comedy.
Well, somebody's just in the club one night and says, hey, I like this girl, let's get her on.
A bunch, and I'd done other stuff for them before. I'd done some segment producing on other shows and everything, and I'd worked on Jon Stewart's, he had a talk show before he did The Daily Show, and I worked on that. So they were familiar with my work, and they said, you know, we want to give you the shot at making this show that's on every day that sort of responds to the world. And I said, well, I'm going to tell you right now that I think that the way to make this thing successful is to do it twofold, because it's not just about the news of the day, it's also about how the media covers the news. And so I think if we do this satirical show that's a satirical newscast, we can sort of make fun of the priorities of the media as well as the media makers in it.
So you're one of the real innovators of this type of thing, where
yes,
people get a little comedy and actually get some news and get educated in the meantime.
Well, that's the goal.
Yeah, well, it is. And as somebody that's as straight-laced as I am, and I am, I try and tell a joke and it falls flat every time. I hate that. I really do. God, I hate that. People, you know, I'll tell the funniest joke in the world and somebody will look at me and go, yeah. It's so disappointing. But so it's hard for me, someone like me, to understand how you work this in such a way. I mean, I know the younger set, like now, for example, watches The Daily Show.
Right.
And a lot of them get all their information from it, and it's done so well.
Well, what's crazy about it is, you know, it used to be that, you know, people, when those studies sort of started happening and people were saying that young people are saying they get most of their information from The Daily Show, it freaked people out at first. It's like, well, that isn't right. And then this year, the Pew organization, they did a poll where they gave a quiz of current events to Fox News watchers, PBS News watchers, CNN, and The Daily Show. And they wanted to see, of all the people who said they only get their information from those sources, who got the most questions right on this news quiz. And The Daily Show people got an over, like, 90% of the questions right. They surpassed the PBS watchers and everybody else.
Oh, surely they didn't pass up the Fox people.
The Fox people are in the basement, please. I'm not even sure. The fact that they can even call themselves news is a little
yeah,
Freaky. But, yeah, so it's pretty incredible that not only does it entertain people, but the information they're getting is actually accurate, which I think is really cool.
Well, how can people on the left get away with this, and obviously the right can't? Why is that?
Well, it's a twofold question. I think that The Daily Show is often perceived as a left thing when it's really just about the truth.
Yeah.
And, when you look at who hasn't been telling the truth, I would have to say it's the right. And then the problem is sometimes the Democrats just sit there and go, well, we're just going to go along with this anyway, for some weird reason, that we all want to shake them until they're,
Like this past weekend, for example.
Like this past weekend. That is inexplicable, because I don't understand, after grilling Alberto Gonzalez, catching him in lies, then the outcome is giving him more power?
Yeah. Hey, we don't trust him, but hell, let's give him a little more power.
Isn't that crazy?
I'm at a loss.
I'm at a loss, too, especially when it's like, you hear these weird, I sort of feel like the difference between Democrats and Republicans, the Democrats keep voting constantly for these horrifying Republican ideas, and so I find that the difference between the Republicans and the Democrats is that the Democrats just oppose these things a little bit. It's like, we weren't that psyched about it. We voted for it, but we weren't that psyched about it. And it's just surprising to me how they even think they need to do anything Bush says. He's got like a 2% approval rating.
Well, you're out and amongst the people. You know that people on the left are more than just a little bit against it. But a person like you must have, when George Bush ran for office way back when, on that fateful day that he was elected, you must have had really ambivalent feelings. On the one hand, as a comedian, you're thinking, oh, my God, this is a treasure trove. This can't get any better. And on the other hand, you're thinking, oh, now the nation's going down the chute.
That's exactly right. One truism is that what's good for the nation, what's good for the nation is never good for comedy. And so you're right. You're like, wow, this is a gold mine. Hooray, hooray. But if you have any kind of conscience about your comedy, you're like, this is a nightmare. And so you do have a little bit of mixed feelings about it. My mother, who is a staunch, staunch Republican, and she's 86 years old and lives in a retirement home in Bloomington, Minnesota, and she's like, I think your politics are awful. I'm like, my politics bought you an assisted living place. That's really nice. So if I was you, I would just keep your lips flapped a little bit and say thank you.
In Bloomington, Minnesota.
Bloomington, Minnesota.
Are you from Minnesota?
I am born and raised in Minneapolis.
Did you know Al?
I did know Al because I also was one of the founders of Air America Radio.
Yeah.
And so I knew Al from comedy days, and then we got back together and reunited doing the Air America thing, and now he's running for Senate.
What do you think his chances are up there?
Well, he's raising more money than God, let me tell you, so that's a good sign.
And I'd like to remind everybody that don't forget this is a state that elected Jesse Ventura.
Well, that's the whole thing. It's pretty crazy. They have an independent streak, which I really like. It's a state that, it's not just it's this Democratic Farm Labor Party, which, they're very staunch, and they're very great. And I think it'll be interesting to see how they feel about Al, who moved away and is sort of the son returning home. He's moved back to Minnesota, and I think he's got a really good shot at it, actually.
Being born and raised up there, my next-door neighbor, of course, I live in Southwest Florida, and there's a lot of Minnesotans that spend the entire winter here.
The snowbirds.
Yeah, and they're as staid and laid back as anybody that you ever see, those Minnesota Lutherans.
It's true.
And you can go tell them the funniest. That's why I wonder how a stand-up comic can make it in Minneapolis-St. Paul. Because you can tell the funniest joke that there ever was on this earth, not me, a good comedian, to my neighbor from Minnesota, and he'll look, stand there and go, yeah, that's very funny.
Yeah, right. That's great. Well, I think those cold winters do produce some great storytellers. I mean, if you just stop and think for a second, Al Franken's from Minnesota, the Coen brothers are from Minnesota, Louis Anderson's from Minnesota, Garrison Keillor. There's sort of this this comedy sort of gene that I think when you're trapped in freezing conditions with cabin fever, I think you just start telling stories, and then to keep the stories interesting, you just keep upping the ante. And so you have to really set the bar pretty high to get those Lutherans laughing because, boy, they're stoic, huh?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, not long ago, they had to go to Hawaii for their annual convention. And he says, well, we really don't want to go.
Yeah.
We don't want to spend time in Hawaii, but we have to for the Synod,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, we got
to
go. We got to go.
Let me ask you, when you were a kid, on a personal note, when you were a kid, how does somebody decide to finally go into business? Were you encouraged? Were you the funny kid in school, all through high school, the trickster, the fun? How did you get to where you are?
Well, I wasn't as much the class clown as I was the class cynic.
Oh.
And I think I got what encouraged me to do it. I was initially going to be a history professor because I'm a big fan of history, mostly 20th century American history. And I realized there wasn't that much money in teaching. But I went to Catholic school, and what sort of started my sort of cynicism ball rolling was I wanted to be an altar boy. And they didn't allow girls to be altar boys at that time.
Uh-huh.
And so I went to the church and to the priest, and my mother, of course, was just beside herself, stop, what are you doing? And I said, why can't I be an altar boy? And they said, because it's called altar boy. And
you'd have to be altered to be a boy.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that just seems like an easily fixable problem if you just also called it altar girl.
Yeah.
Like, that can't be the reason. So then I got a petition going, and I got girls to sign it, and we sent it to the Archdiocese, and my mother was like, oh, stop it already. So I started my little activism crusade, and I think I just, if somebody didn't give me an answer that was in power, I think I looked at that as a sign of, I was always a skeptic about it, and my skepticism then I think just turned into, like, satire. I think it grew into satire as I just became an adult person.
Okay, okay. And professionally, how did it evolve then?
Somebody dared me to do it. I was in college, and somebody said, why don't you get on stage and try it? And I did, and I thought it was really fun.
You weren't scared to death? You didn't bomb your first time out?
Well, you know what? Here's the little secret about stand-up. Normally, you don't bomb your first time out because you're so dumb that you can get some laughs. If you do get laughs, then you think you get sort of cocky, and then your second time out is when you really bomb. And that's when you decide, all right, am I going to go for a third time to see if the odds are going to be for me or against me. And if you go on stage that third time and you do okay, it's like getting that one nice drive off on a golf course. It can keep you going back to that game, and all the other stuff, all the hooks and all the other stuff, you know, don't matter because you got that one good drive off. And then it's kind of like you just keep going.
Lean years?
Oh, my God, you can't even believe it. So many lean years. In fact, I was doing stand-up and trying to write and everything, and you're just constantly trying to, you know, be hand-to-mouth and doing stuff. And, you know, you move to New York or L.A., which are really expensive cities, and so you're, you know, scraping and doing clubs in nursing homes and doing things for $25 here and $50 there. But, you know, if you love it, you somehow can persevere. I think you can make it. Sticking it out is half the battle.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
Seen the, and what is it about the tragedy of so many comedians? There are so many comedians that have such sad lives, and we recently lost another one, Richard Jenny, who I thought was one of the funniest
very
guys.
Tragic.
That, oh.
You know, I think sometimes there's a real dark side to the clown facade. And I think comedy can sometimes come from pain, or it comes from outrage. It normally doesn't come from healthy people. I mean, let's be honest. You can't be totally all there if your drive is to beg strangers to laugh at you.
Yeah, or you get a guy like Sam Kinison. One of my favorites. But
yeah.
there was a dark, dark, dark side to Sam Kinison.
Absolutely.
But he he made
and
me
I
hysterical.
And I think, you know, when you're trying to speak the truth on stage through humor, if you know the truth, sometimes it's sometimes an ugly place.
Well, so now you're going back on the road.
Back out on the road. Really excited about that. That's the one thing with writing and producing. I had to you know, eliminate certain things in my life, and the stand-up was one of the things that I didn't have time to write for myself because I was so busy writing and producing for other people, and I realized that I really missed it, and so I decided that I was going to sort of take smaller writing and producing jobs so that I could get back out there and do stand-up, and I'm really excited. I'll be in San Francisco August 23rd to the 25th, and then I'm going to be in Cleveland on September 13th to the 16th, which I'm really excited about, the Punchline in San Francisco and at Hilarities in Cleveland.
I'm an old Ohio boy originally, and I've not been to Hilarities in Cleveland.
Oh, it's a great, great club. I love it. It's one of those independent clubs that's not part of a chain. The owners are great. It's downtown. It's just great. It's a really fun room.
So have you done the club before?
I have, yep.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, you started back, I'm just looking at your schedule, you started back in May, back on the road again?
Yep, I was in D.C. In May, and May and June, and then in July I was in Boston, and I'll be in San Francisco in August, and September I will be in Cleveland.
Well, Liz, I want to thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me, and thanks for all the hard work you're doing.
Well, thanks, and I wish you all the success in the world with this new tour. You're a funny gal, and I love
you
your satire.
You're the best.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Liz Winstead. She is a funny, funny gal. And, you know, I never really thought about it in that light, that your cynicism and would force you into a little satire. That's kind of the kind of humor that I like, and that's probably one of the reasons that I like comedy like that. I'm not a... I've told people, and by the way, we're getting a heck of a storm outside the studio, so don't be surprised if we go bye-bye for a minute or so. If we do, I will we'll come back as soon as possible. But so many people have different funny bones. I know I do. I tell people, for example, and some of you will think I'm terrible for saying this, but it's the truth. Bob Hope, for example. Bob Hope is known as one of the funniest guys that ever lived. Bob Hope, on his best day, never got a smile out of me. Not ever. I couldn't find anything funny about Bob Hope. And yet, on the other hand, you get a guy like, God rest his soul, Sam Kinison. I'd laugh till I was sick. Till I was literally sick. And Richard Jenny as well. And Bellucci. And those kinds. So I guess I do kind of like the dark humor, if you will. And I like the satire as well. I certainly do. And God, George Bush has got to be a absolute goldmine for satirical comedians. I don't think there's any question about that. I see we have the official Guy James Show puppies in the room. Kukla and Sophie have come in for a visit. It's lightning and thunder outside the studio, and so those two... They're looking for some company. yes, lightning and thunder. Hey, we're going to pause for a quick break. We'll be back in just a moment.
singing right to me. I can hear the melody. Story is there for the taking. Diving over Canaan, singing to the soul. There's people out there turning music into gold.
Back with you here on the Guy James Show, coming up on the bottom of the hour, about 2.5 minutes till the bottom of the hour. Welcome, and thanks for being with us here today. Kind of a stormy afternoon outside now here at the Guy James Show studios here in Southwest Florida, coming to you all across the country and around the world. And you can join the program. You can give us a call at 866-546-5254, and let's go to the phone right now. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy Dave, I had to call you on my neighbor's phone. I've been calling you on my own, and I get a recording to please call back later like you're not on the air at all.
Oh.
Anyway, I have something that might be encouraging to you, a reality that I've been exposed to. One of your friends and colleagues, Tom Hartman, he has several times, and he now has a couple of 3 million listeners, said to call in as fast as you can, say just who you are, where you are, and who you're voting for. And this is so he gets a couple of hundred calls in a very short period of time. And each time, how do you think it goes?
Who are you voting for?
Yeah. It's favor. Kucinich over Hillary, 20-25-1. So what is that telling me? That's telling me that our media is being told to lie to us, told that we really want Hillary, told that Dennis Kucinich doesn't have any chance. But this is thousands of people calling in to a Democratic talk show saying which Democrat they want to be their candidate. So I don't know how long they're going to be able to pull that off and just keep telling us what they're telling us. But
well, Dave, it might be that people in the middle, the centrist Democrats, don't listen to talk radio.
Well, maybe. But I'm thinking everybody I know, every group that I sit in with, and I'm in a lot of them here, take a poll, and everybody says Kucinich is the hope for this country. Kucinich will hold this administration accountable. Kucinich will really try to end the war. Kucinich will try to give health care for everybody. All the things that we really want, he's for, and the rest of them are just a little more on the corporate side.
Well, as you know, in the last election, we endorsed Dennis Kucinich. We've had him here as our guest locally and met with him and had... not so long ago at a soup and salad supper and sat at the table with Dennis and his lovely new wife and had a nice discussion. And you know, the great thing about Dennis Kucinich is his time is your time. He's not one of these politicians that's rushed into the room and out of the room by security. He come in and sit as long as it takes to hear you out. And he loves to hear from the people. And that's one of the endearing qualities of the man. He's not a typical politician. He does want to hear what you have to say, what I have to say, and he digests it. He takes it back to Washington with him, and he uses it to form his opinion and his voting record, which is the way it's supposed to go last time I looked.
Well, you know I listen to you all the time, and I know you're a big fan of his, and so is most of Democratic America, as I can tell it. It's just we're both talking at the same instant, do we?
I think you're right, Dave. I think the dentist is a favorite amongst Democrats. I just I know the reality of the situation is many of the high-powered Democrats I know in the upper echelons, you might say, of the party love Dennis. But they're interested in one thing and one thing only, and that's electability. And they just right or wrongly, they don't feel that Dennis is electable. And I've always disagreed with that. Who am I? I don't run the party, unfortunately. I wish I did.
There's a logic here, and that is that this greedy corporate America wants nothing to do with Dennis Kucinich. They want to convince us he's unelectable. That he's not. See, he is saying that he would health care for all. How would you pay for that, Mr. Kucinich? I would tax the hell out of the rich. Now they don't want it. They're going to try to convince us he is a totally unelectable guy. But I think most people are saying yes, it would be nice for the rich to pay their fair share. And the same thing with Edwards. Edwards is saying health care, and yes, I would tax the rich. And so they're saying, no, Edwards, no chance. But Edwards also beats Hillary 20-25-1. So.
Yeah. Did you see, speaking of taxing the rich, did you see Warren Buffett's statement the other day? He said where he's paying a lesser percentage of his income as taxes as his secretary?
Yeah.
That's a pretty tough statement right there. That's an indictment on our tax system and the right wingers and what they've done. But you got to hand it to them; they set out to do it, and they've done it, and they've continued to muster support for their tax cutting, which has hurt America. It's hurt the infrastructure of this country. It's hurt the middle class and the lower class, and I don't mean lower class, but the poorer class. So, but they've set out to do it, and they've done it. Hey, Dave, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you.
Thank you, Guy.
I just to change subject just for a second, and I'll get back to what I want to talk about, but I promised myself I could not let this show go by without commenting on Mr. Bob Allen. I'm sure you remember him. He's the state legislator in Florida who was caught soliciting a cop in the restroom. Over around, what is it, Titusville over there? You know that's over in Mark Foley territory. I wonder if they know each other. Anyway, that was about a month ago, and now Bob has figured out his alibis. He's had a little time to think about it. I know being caught under the circumstances where he was there, that it's probably hard to come up with an off-the-cuff alibi all of a sudden, you know? I don't know. What would you say? I don't know. I don't know what you say. You're caught soliciting sex from a male undercover police officer in a public restroom. I don't know. I don't know what I'd say. I'm stammering and stuttering right now, and it wasn't me. So I don't know what you would say. But he's had a month, you see. He's had a month to talk about, to think about the whole thing. And in typical politician style, Representative Bob Allen, of course, he did say to the cop that night, I don't suppose it would help if you knew I was a state representative. Oh, God, I can't believe he's that stupid to say that. But so he's come up with an alibi. And I think it's just precious. I really do. I think it's just absolutely precious. He said, I certainly wasn't there to have sex with anybody and certainly wasn't there to exchange money for it. He was arrested on charges of soliciting prostitution. He said, now, he honestly said this. And I heard the audio of him saying it, and this is Alan talking. This was a pretty stocky black guy, and there was nothing but other black guys around in the park, Alan, who is white, told police in a tape statement after his arrest. Alan said he feared he was about to be a statistic and would have said anything just to get away. I love this story. I really do. He said he would have said anything to get away. So you're a bigot. We know that now. And he's a totally straight, middle-aged, self-admitted conservative, evangelical, another one who's run on family values, white guy and a politician. And so if you put yourself in his position, you're a white, evangelical, conservative, Republican politician who has run on family values and put just like Foley, put up some measures in the state house against this sort of thing. And so you're there and you feel that you're being intimidated by the presence of a large black man. The first thing that would come to your mind, put yourself in Alan's position. The first thing that would come to your mind when you're caught in that thing, you're afraid for your life because there's a big black guy there, the first thing that you'd think of is, how am I going to get out of this? I'll offer to give this guy a blowjob for $20. Is that what would come to your mind? Because that's what he did. I just think that's one of the coolest stories I ever heard. I love it. I really do. And am I having fun with this guy's misery? Absolutely, I am. Anybody that's anybody that's as two-faced as he is and proves himself to be a racist too, and is a representative of for the state of Florida in the Florida State House. Oh my God. And speaking of crazy Republicans, how about Tom Tancredo? Is this guy... that's another story I really love. If it weren't so serious, it would be absolutely hilarious. Tancredo says that we need to bomb Mecca and Medina, and that's going to thwart the Iranians and those Muslims from doing anything else. So we'll bomb Mecca and Medina. And then he says if the State Department doesn't like what I'm saying, I must be doing something right. And the audience cheered him. The audience at this debate cheered this man for saying that. Now, if that doesn't prove the point about what I've been saying about the right-wing neocon run-of-the-mill Republicans, this 26 or 27% or whatever it is that still sticks with Bush, I don't know what would prove my point if that doesn't. They cheer this guy for saying that. Now, what kind of a freaking lunatic do you have to be to say that in a public forum, that we need to bomb Mecca and Medina, and then be there in the crowd and start clapping your little hands together? Yeah, that's right, Tom. You tell them. Let's bomb them. I felt sick. The base of the Republican Party, and make no mistake that... No mistake, those people who were cheering Tom Tancredo at that debate, that is the base of the Republican Party. They are at the very foundation of this Bush administration. They are still supporting him. That's the base. They're cheering a guy who's crazy enough to suggest bombing Mecca and Medina. That's what we're dealing with here, folks. That's the message I've been trying to get across for the last 5 years, that 20-something percent is hanging in there with Bush in this phony war, and thank God another Republican finally has admitted that it is a phony war in the name of Newt Gingrich. He's spewing the rhetoric the right wing really wants to hear. That is what they want to hear. His suggestion of bombing the Muslims into oblivion is exactly what those neocons want to hear. And make no mistake, they will do it if they get the chance. Does anybody doubt that? I don't. I don't doubt it for a moment. You know, Tancredo, he's got that crazed look in his eye, and the statements he made the other night about health care, I just wanted to, I mentioned earlier that I had something serious that I wanted to talk about. And I hope you'll bear with me for just a moment. It's and this is coming from a personal note and regarding the show. So I hope you'll hear me out. It's been very difficult these past few weeks to decide what path to take with this show. I started this program almost 5 years ago because a friend of mine and I felt something had to be done to even the playing field in the media between the neocons and the liberals. I wanted to put the spotlight of truth on the real issues facing Americans in their daily lives and also on our foreign policy, which was headed for disaster. And week in and week out, these past 5 years, both on terrestrial radio and on our internet program, we've tried our best to bring you interesting guests and informed opinions and indisputable facts, basically bringing you the truth that it seems has a hard time coming to the surface on a lot of other talk show venues. And I really think that putting that forth as our mission, I think we've held up our end of the bargain. At the time we started this program, the liberal community was clamoring for more representation in the media. Air America wasn't up and running yet, and liberals had made very, very little headway in combating the overwhelming presence of right-wing radio. And so we wanted to be a voice for those who had been neglected by right-wing leading radio companies all over this country. But I have realized something that perhaps I didn't want to acknowledge previously. And that is that I hugely underestimated the apathy of the average American voter, or non-voter as it were. I've discovered in these past 5 years that most Americans are content with turning their heads the other way, as long as the hungry beast on the prowl doesn't come inside their homes and get them and their family. And yes, they realize there's something terribly wrong in our country. They see that all right. But the everyday mundane things in their life take precedent. And the nation's troubles will just have to be left for somebody else to solve. Because with the house payment, the kids, the doctor bills, their jobs, they don't have the time it takes to get involved. And yes, they'll bitch and moan about what they perceive as being wrong in the country, but they just don't have the time nor the inclination to do anything about it. They're able to buy groceries, make the mortgage payments most of the time, make the car payments, maybe rent a movie now and then, drink a beer on the weekends. What else is there? Just let the people we elect do the jobs we send them to Washington to do. You know, oh yeah, they're smart people. They'll get the job done. Sure they will. And don't forget, they're going to lower your taxes so that you can have more beer and a new pair of pants from Walmart. Many months ago, I gave you a list of things we could do with this show to make things better. And I want to bring them to your attention once again. We could just throw in the towel and say everything will be all right. We could try and reshape the Democratic Party to what it was when it truly was the party of the people. We could go out and riot in the streets in some sort of mass civil disobedience until the powers that be are forced to take us seriously. Hell, we could move to Canada or someplace else where we're not being spied upon by our own government. But personally, no matter what, I'm not going to quit trying to make things better. I owe it to myself, I owe it to my family, and I owe it to this country. And I will not become uninvolved. I will not be someone who talks a good game but doesn't put my actions and my money where my mouth is. That isn't for me. I think you know that. We can all sit at our computers all day long. We can blog or read other blogs and do that all day. We can join forums. We can chat. We can do all those things ad nauseum. But it matters little if we don't force the issues with those who really matter. All the moaning and bitching in the world amongst ourselves is not going to get the job done. We need voices. And as I mentioned earlier, I had high hopes for this show being an instrument of change. I had hoped that a lot of people would participate and help and support the program so it could be made bigger and better as time went along. And as you well know, many of you, I've made repeated appeals to my audience over these past few weeks as to the need and the urgency for help in keeping the lights on in the studio and keeping this show alive. I think you should also know that my requests have been met with very, very little support. I want to thank those of you that have responded to our request for help. I appreciate your support more than I could ever tell you. You have done your part, and you've put your money where your mouths are, and that's all I could ever ask for. I've spoken often on this program about the state of the economy that we're currently experiencing. I know it's difficult. It's difficult for me and most everybody I know. I also know that the right-wingers are carrying on with literally hundreds of programs, think tanks, and foundations that are supported in many cases by ordinary people who believe in what they're doing, no matter how misguided they might be. I'm going to leave this up to you, my audience. I've done what I can financially. I've worked with very little financial support from day one, and I'm not able to do it on my own any longer. The fact is that the vast majority of our audience has not contributed a dime to help keep this program alive. The future of this program is no longer in my hands. It's in yours. You will decide whether or not this program has any value to you and to the liberal cause. And you might think it has no value, in which case you should choose to do nothing. But if you do think the show has some merit, if you do think we need more liberal voices, if you think we need some passion on the left, some value, then I hope you'll consider helping out in whatever manner that you can. Plain and simple, it's up to you whether or not the Guy James Show continues. And I'm not talking about a long period of time to gather support here. I'm talking about a matter of a few weeks. If support isn't forthcoming, we'll go dark. And another liberal voice will have bitten the dust, and it'll be another victory for the right-wing neocons that already control the airways. It's your choice. And I'm sorry I have to put it that way, but that's the God's honest truth. It's just how it is. Going to pause for a break, and we'll be back for a moment, in a moment.
Is our children learning? And find out that the literacy level of our children are appalling. Why don't you volunteer? Why don't you help mentor a child how to read? And you're working hard to put food on your family.
I think we ought to raise the age at which juveniles can have a gun.
Families is where our nation finds hope, where wings take dream.
What you can do to help is you can love a neighbor just like you'd like to be loved yourself.
I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
Poor people aren't necessarily killers. Just because you happen to be not rich doesn't mean you're willing to kill.
It's your money. You paid for it.
In my speech to the nation, whatever you want to call it, I asked Americans to give 4,000 hours over the rest of your life of service to America. That's what I asked. I said 4,000 hours.
That's not good enough for America. 10th is 10 spots too low.
That can't living with the bill means it won't become law.
The legislature's job is to write law. It's the executive branch job to interpret law.
Because they want the federal government controlling the Social Security like it's some kind of federal program.
Well, I understand that
the unrest in the Middle East creates unrest throughout the region. You see, free nations are peaceful nations. Free nations don't attack each other. Free nations don't develop weapons of mass destruction. For a century and a half now, America and Japan have formed one of the great and enduring alliances of modern times. Africa is a nation that suffers from incredible disease. I think war is a dangerous place. It'll take time to restore chaos. One of history's worst tyrants. And in so doing, we not only freed the American people, we made our own people more secure. Not one doubt in my mind that we will fail. I didn't realize I had dyslexia. Tariffs and barriers everywhere are torn down. In order for us to get the groundwork to discuss a framework for peace, to lay the... All right, Karen is with us, a West Texas girl, just like me. He can't take the high horse and then claim the low road. That this Thursday, ticket counters and airplanes will fly out of Ronald Reagan Airport.
I think if you know what you believe, it makes it a lot easier to answer questions.
Oh, he makes it so easy, doesn't he? Makes it so easy for the likes of your Jay Leno's and your Liz Winsteads and all the great comedians that have had a good time with George W. Bush. Speaking of having a good time with people, we often talk about it on this program about, and let me just say it how it is, about the utter stupidity of a lot of Americans, how they stick their heads in sand and just, I don't know, whether they just don't have the sense to keep up with the political affairs in this country and the direction their country's taking, or they just don't give a damn or what. But I ran across this little piece of audio here where they got a man out in the street interviewing Americans, and I think this is a hoot.
Look, I know a lot of people give Americans a bum rap for being stupid and knowing nothing about the world, but the reality couldn't be further from the truth, as I discovered on the streets here, asking US locals about the very world their country runs.
Name a country that begins with U.
Yugoslavia?
With U, Utah.
A country that starts with a U. Utopia.
Who's in the coalition of the willing?
No freaking idea.
Afghanistan, Kuwait,
Iraq, Pakistan, you know?
New Zealand?
New Zealand.
What's the religion of Israel?
Israeli.
Muslim.
Islamic.
Catholic, probably.
What religion are Buddhist monks?
Buddhist monks.
Buddhist monks.
Islamic, I don't know.
Who won the Vietnam War?
We did.
And who was...
Wait, were we even in the Vietnam War? Okay, good.
Who is Fidel Castro?
A singer.
How many sides does a triangle have?
Damn, four.
There's no sides. One.
What is the currency used in the United Kingdom?
What's the currency in the United Kingdom?
What is it?
The United Kingdom, I don't know.
Possibly American money.
Queen Elizabeth's money? That's all I know.
Name a country that begins with U.
A country?
Yeah. What about this one?
What?
The United States of America. In terms of the war on terror, who do you think should be the next country to invade?
Saudi Arabia.
Somebody in the Middle East.
We'll make a big glass crater out of the fucking Middle East, for all I care.
I'm thinking Italy.
Italy.
Mm-hmm. Cuba.
Cuba?
Yeah.
Iran.
Iran? Why is that?
I think there's a revolution going on pretty soon.
Russia, China.
India and Pakistan.
Indonesia, Brazil.
Korea.
Korea?
Sure.
Yeah, why do you say that?
They're trouble.
They're trouble? Yep, okay. What's trouble about them?
Their attitude.
Canada.
Sri Lanka? Right here.
Ah.
Never heard of it.
Iran?
Iran? Yeah. Okay. All right, do I put a number one in Iran there?
South. Where are we?
At the end of that, it doesn't make much sense with the audio, but they had a map of the world, and they were asking these people to put pins in where they thought this nation or that nation was. And the one guy took a pin with a little flag on it and when asked to identify Iran and stuck it smack dab in the middle of Australia. Yeah, right in the middle of Australia, and said that was Iran. And then another guy looked at Australia and said, I didn't realize that North Korea was so much bigger than South Korea, while he was sitting there looking at Australia and New Zealand. Oh, that's what I mean. It's a little tough for some of these people some of the times, my God. Tomorrow, I want to talk a lot about tomorrow, about the destruction of the great middle class. And I don't know yet whether we're going to have a guest on to talk about it or not. We're working on it, but whether or not we do, we're still going to talk about the destruction of the great middle class. And it is my opinion, and you've heard me voice it many, many times, that the destruction of the middle class will lead to the destruction of America. The great middle class made this country great, and the demise of the middle class will cause the eventual demise of America. That's my opinion. Many stories about the middle class that we'll be talking about. Folks, we've got about 7 million people here in this country who are in jeopardy of losing their homes. And they're not all poor people. Many of them are middle class folks, and we will talk about that tomorrow and the reasons for it, how it's happened, why the middle class is going down the tubes, and what it will mean for America. And if you have any ideas on that, I hope you'll give us a call tomorrow during the program. But it's a sad, sad state of affairs that we're in now. I see it starting to reach all around the country. Had friends from up north now let me know that the real estate market's kind of gone to pot in Ohio. I know Northwest Ohio is hurting. I know bankruptcies in the Toledo, Ohio area, for example, are up 59%, folks. 59%. And it's not because people in most cases have overspent. Certainly not. The number one cause for bankruptcy, by far and away, the number one causes of it are losing your job, medical bills, or a breakup of the family. It's not like most people have gone out and gone on a wild spending spree. That's something that the neocons love to spread around. So we will talk about that in great depth tomorrow, the demise of the great middle class and what it means for America. And I think it's tragic news for the entire country. After all, there's going to be more rich people in this country, and there's going to be more poor people in this country, and the middle class will come up missing. And you say, well, why do you talk about the middle class? Why not talk about the poor? Do you understand who has done the most for the poor over the years? It's been the middle class. And therefore, if the middle class disappears, that means the poor are going to suffer even more. Because the middle class, the folks that give to the United Way and all the charities and so forth that help the poor all over this country, the middle class itself is going to disappear, is disappearing. And it's a tragic situation individually for each and every family it happens to, and it's a tragedy for this great nation. So do tune in tomorrow for that, and we'll talk at great length about it tomorrow. Once again, the demise of the great middle class. I hope it's not too late to stop it. People that are in insurance, so many people are not even included on the figures that about people not having insurance. There's so many people have what we call faux insurance. It's insurance that isn't worth a damn. Yes, they're considered insured, but when they go to have a claim of some kind, they find out that their insurance doesn't cover but only a small portion of their medical bills, and they end up going down the tubes financially anyway. Many people are underinsured or have what we call faux insurance. It really isn't worth the paper it's written on, although they pay for it out of their paychecks or out of their checkbook. Well, do want to remind you once again that you are listening to The Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. I'd like to thank Billy Shears, music director of The Guy James Show, and let you know that you've heard the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.